You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It is 10:03 and I'm really looking forward to talking to our next guest because it's been an extremely busy start to 2024 for the cricketing calendar, especially around the world with all the various formats and competitions capturing our attention. Of course, we know the impact and the grip franchise T20 cricket has on the sport these days, and that extends to Pakistan, which has a very, very successful and popular league as well. And this year it was won for the third time by Islamabad United. But at the helm this time around was a gentleman we know very well as being a successful Black Caps coach and a high profile in very, very, very many areas of cricket. And that, of course, is Mike Hessen. Mike's been keeping an eye on the early stages of the IPL as well, which he's had a vested interest in over a long period of time as well. So, Hess, good morning to you. Great to catch up.
Good morning, Smitty. Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you. Here we are in the middle of March. look, yes, Islamabad United, successful. I saw the emotion. I saw your emotion with Shadab Khan and the rest of your squad. It meant a lot to win this title. Tell us a wee bit about the PSL, which doesn't get, for many reasons, I suppose, the same kind of profile as others, but where you were, it was very high profile.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when you're in a country with 200 million people, the you know, the engagement is vast, and you know, I think it's pretty well known as the second biggest tournament in the world, obviously behind the IPL, and that's just sheer numbers, really. But I've never been there before. I mean, often, you know, with being involved in the IPL, you know, for the last 5 years, it's been difficult because my role's sort of been a 12-month-a-year role, so trying to go over to Pakistan for various reasons was, you know, was not an option. So I guess when I got the chance to go over there, the team I was keen to get involved with was Islamabad United, and that's probably because of an old mate of yours, Dean Jones, who was the initial coach over there, and I'd sort of been a part of helping him set it up. So, and unfortunately, Dino's obviously passed away since then, and to be able to go over there and, I guess, carry on that journey with that involvement was pretty special.
Tell us a wee bit about, you mentioned the population there, about the level of interest, the profile that exists there in terms of your franchise, Islamabad United. There are five franchises across five cities as well. So tell us a wee bit about five other franchises, I should say. Tell us a wee bit about the extent of the competition, Mike.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's only the six teams, so clearly the talent pool is not spread too much. So, and you have a draft rather than an auction. So, you know, you can retain players from previous years, but there's a draft system. So, it's a little bit different than I guess, what I was used to. But, as I said, the talent pool doesn't get spread too far. You have to play an emerging player. So, every team has to play someone that's classed as emerging, which obviously helps the production line of Pakistan talent. And we happened to select Naseem Shah's brother. So we managed to trade Naseem Shah in the winter. And then we managed to buy both his brothers at the draft, and they were emerging. So it sort of carried on that, you know, the family atmosphere, I guess, from Islamabad United. Lahore Qalandars had won it the previous 2 years. So they were, you know, Shaheen Shah Afridi is the captain of Pakistan. He ran that team. You know, Karachi's, you know, a couple of New Zealand players played there, including Tim Seifert this year. Ultan Sultans is probably the most successful. It's been the last three finals, but hasn't managed to win one of those yet. And that actually had Muhammad Wazim, who I had an involvement with when he was with Otago many years ago. So quite a few links along the way. Peshawar Zalmi was run by Darren Sammy, who obviously captained Pakistan, West Indies to a lot of World Cups, and he was my golfing partner out over there. Actually, it was their only way to get out of the hotel with security. So he was there. Who have I left out? I left out Quest. Shane Watson was Quest's coach. Viv Richards was their mentor. So they had plenty of talent along the way as well. So it was, there's some big names involved in the competition. It was fiercely. Well, even going down to the last round, no one even knew who made the semi-finals, or the playoffs. So it was a fiercely fought competition, and one that, we snuck over the line. We had three wins in the last 4 days. So we came from third. We had to win three games in 4 days to win a title. So we made it hard for ourselves, but, managed to sneak over the line, which was nice.
In terms of playing personnel, you have Colin Munro in your group.
Yeah, so we had Colin Munro, and then we brought in Martin Guptill as a replacement player as a player who came in at the end. And in the end, he played the last three games. He took Alex Hale's place in the final as well. Munro's been there for 5 years, been a big part of it. And, he was instrumental in us making the playoffs. Then he was injured. Guppy came in and took his place. And in the end, the final, we had two New Zealanders opening the batting for us. So it was... It was a pretty tight group, and I had James Franklin over there as a batting coach. So there was a few Kiwis, which was nice.
Yeah, well, that's interesting for me. Here's the reason I asked about Colin Munro, and you brought up Martin Guptill as well. They've basically been discarded by New Zealand cricket. But in Colin Munro's case as well, up until he left to join you, he was a very successful captain of the Brisbane Heat. And we know what happened in the BBL. What about Colin? Do you talk to Colin Munro about international duties? The conversation ever come up?
Yeah, look, I understand he was even contacted for this next tour to Pakistan, and asked about his availability. And I think, Colin's probably been in his vintage form for the last 3 years in T20 cricket all around the world. He's well sought after in every single competition. He's one of the very first picked. And you're talking against, all the great names around the world at the moment. Munro's right up there in terms of those that are picked as franchise players. He's a very reliable player, but he's also very explosive, as New Zealand fans know, on his day. And he's, fiercely loyal. So he's been with Islamabad 5 years. He's been with, every team he's been with, he's tried to stick there for a long time. And that's a trait that is probably uncommon in the franchise circuit. So I think New Zealand have probably missed out on at least two amazing years of Munro, because he can bat anywhere. He can bat at the top, but he can bat anywhere in the top five. So... he smashed 80 off, I think, 34 balls in one game when he was injured. He was on one leg, so that pretty much turned the corner for us in one game.
That's Maxwell-like, to be fair, Glenn Maxwell-like. Where does the PSL then sit in terms of world competitions? I mean, are we still putting the IPL at the top, obviously, and then where does PSL fit in underneath that?
Yeah, it's just eyeballs, really. So eyeballs, PSL sits at number two at the moment. Yeah, a long way behind. The IPL is obviously streets ahead, and, you got 1.4 billion people and a huge following over 20 years or 18 years. So, but the PSL is into their ninth season, and it's huge. It's not huge just in Pakistan. It's huge around the world, I guess, the time zones as well. It's a very popular competition. There's a heck of a lot more coming up around the world. I mean, as New Zealand fans, time zone-wise, the BBL is big for us, but in terms of eyeballs, it's not even close to the PSL. It's just audience, isn't it? But I enjoyed my time there, but as I said, there are so many different tournaments around the world. You probably jump on the circuit for 11 or 12 months a year if that's what you choose to do. So, that's what obviously a lot of players are doing around the world. I choose just one at the moment and do a bit of broadcasting, and I might do one other one so I can have a bit of a balance and still spend plenty of time at home as well, which is good.
great balance, actually, that you've managed to put together in your travels. I imagine you still keep a relatively close eye on what's going on here at home, Hess. And I just wonder, and you've coached sides against Australia, what is it that we just can't achieve against them?
Yeah, it's interesting one, Smitty. Whenever we go to world events, we're actually pretty good against them. Obviously, World T20s, we've done well against them in recent times. But you get to those crunch games, and it is about how many match winners, I guess, you've got on your team. And with not trying to give Australia too much credit, but they've actually got so many guys that can turn a game on its head so quickly. So even when you think you're ahead, you probably know in the back of your mind you're still not, because they've got another guy who's just rolling out, whether it be Mitch Marsh at 6 or 7 or Carey we saw the other day. They just keep coming at you and you can't even relax. We're probably a side where, we've got a lot of fine players, but we've got to all come together on our day. And when we do, we thoroughly enjoy it. But when we don't, we sort of see it as a missed opportunity. And I think those that have been around a while, it can be pretty frustrating because when you're ahead, you probably still think that you probably still have that bit of doubt. And I was lucky enough we won a few Chapel Hadleys there while I was there, which were great, but they weren't probably the big stage that we all wanted to win on, whether it be a Test match, whether it be a World Cup. But when you do beat them at any time, you've had to earn it, that's for sure.
It is it's an interesting thing that I think the more it happens in a weird sort of way, the more mental it becomes with each group. I mean, the last day at Christchurch, the odds were heavily in New Zealand's favour. I mean, and particularly when they got Travis Head out very first ball he faced, and even after putting down Mitchell Marsh, you still got the feeling. Australia had so much work to do, but in the back of your mind, if you follow cricket long enough, you damn well knew that they could do it, and you sense the players kind of knew that as well if you looked at some of the body language.
Yeah, and I mean, to be brutally honest, Alex Carey looked like a fish out of water in the previous Test match. Now, it wasn't look like, you didn't sort of think, oh, Carey's coming out and he's going to turn the game on its head, but he did. And you know, New Zealand did have their opportunities, and I think when those opportunities go down, you're dead right. That self-doubt starts to creep in. That, oh no, here we go again. Sort of mentality, and it's one of those ones that you're right. The more players that are there that have been through it, it's actually a negative in many ways, because they can sort of keep bringing up those times where we sort of let it slip through our fingers. So. Look, it was incredibly frustrating, wasn't it? I think Munro, myself, we both got up in the middle of the night, in Pakistan and watched that last day, and with real hope in that first session, and then just real frustration and despair as the day went by.
It was actually it was quite deflating. Right, let's look now at the role of an international cricket coach. And, of course, you've done it and done it very successfully across all three forms. But since your time as such, the World T20 competition has become, and I'm talking in terms of international here, it's biannually, which means you can actually, set a program together and get to compete for that program every 2 years. And this has always been a bit of a talking point, and Gary Stead himself some time ago said, look, he thought it was about time to spread the load a wee bit, and then he promptly signed a deal to take all three on again. What about your thoughts now, Hess, that they've had a chance to step away for a few years? Is it too much for one guy, in all honesty, to do the whole lot?
Well, I think it's probably too much to keep a track of everyone as well. I mean, I think the next 12 months, 24 months are going to be really interesting in terms of how contracts are structured, in terms of international ones, whether New Zealand will have a whole heap more players on the circuit around the world. They'll focus on the shorter form, and if you're a T20 specialist, then you're going to have to spend time tracking those guys and spending time with them and getting them to perform a particular role that you want them to perform at the World Cup. So that in itself, if you do it well, you know, will be a full-time job. And I think that's the way it's going to head. I mean, I think there are so many players that probably don't have the skills to perform in Test cricket and have never chosen to do that anyway, that, you know, you're going to need to work with them throughout the year. You're going to need to prepare them. You're going to need to track them across different tournaments. You're going to need to try and find them engagements around the world where they can actually expand their skills. So that in itself is a full-time job if you want to do it properly, I think. And then, so I don't think it's white ball and red ball. I think it purely is T20 as a separate beast. And then, you know, you can do one day World Cups every 4 years and the test team, which, you know, New Zealand are only playing, you know, I know they're playing a few more this year, but the test job itself is not a huge onerous time on task. So I think you'd probably pull those two together and then have your T21 as a separate coach.
You are very successful, but and part of your group, of course, was the Bolt-Southie combination, who were very, very good as a unit together. Of course, the Bolt factor is basically gone now, not interested in playing him in the tests at home, even though there was a modicum of interest there. What about Tim Southie as a captain, Hess, as you sit back? I mean, a lot of respect for the way he goes about things, but we've seen in this recent series in India where your quick bowler is pretty much a passenger. But in our case, our quick bowler is our captain who can't afford to be a passenger. What do we do in that regard there?
Yeah, look, I think it's really difficult to be a test bowler and a captain. I know Pat Cummins has come on board and he's had a stellar, you know, 18 months or whatever it is. But when you are playing around the subcontinent and you're, you know, more towards the end of your career than the start, and to be fair, you want your seam bowlers to have an impact. So they're like impact bowlers. They come in and bowl 2-3 over spells in the subcontinent. And they've got to be, you know, generally have some pace about them. They've got to have some airspeed. And we know Tim's an incredible bowler in all conditions around the world, but he's not that shock type of bowler anymore. So I think when you're heading to the subcontinent now, you know, Tim's not an automatic selection in those one or two seamers that you might go with. You know, there'll be some venues where you might go with one. So having him as captain is really difficult. So, yeah, that's not his fault. Obviously, you know, in New Zealand, you know, right up until now, he's been incredible. And in most places around the world, he's an automatic pick. But I'm not so sure he is now. I mean, I think he's the first to admit that, you know, he's probably down a little bit on pace, you know, wants conditions that suit to be able to do it. And it's really difficult to do that and captain the side when you're still fighting for your spot. And I think Tim still wants to play test cricket, and I'm sure he still wants to fight for his spot, but he's not guaranteed to play every test match, and nor he should, because playing back-to-back tests in the subcontinent as a seamer would be incredibly difficult anyway. So, tough ask to me. I think Tim himself knows that as I said, he's fighting for his spot, so doing that as a captain is pretty tough to do.
And just finally, Hess, how important is Auckland to have Test cricket? How important is for the game and for Auckland to have Test cricket up there? And Eden Park's not going to be a goer. I don't know how well you know Auckland. Is there another possibility in your mind that might work there?
Well, we've sort of heard about a few over the years, haven't we? Like Western Springs was spoken about at one stage. Obviously, Auckland have spent some money out, you know, on their own domestic ground as well. I mean, I'm not really sure where the venue is, but I think your biggest city in the world needs to have a Test cricket venue. I think there's no doubt about that. There's so many Test cricket fans around Auckland that want to go and watch and support, you know, the national side. And at the moment, they're going to venues where, you know, they're suitable to host Test cricket. You know, you've got the Uni Oval, you've got Hagley, you've got Hamilton, you've got the Mounts. You know, you've got the Basin, obviously, but and your biggest venue around the world, or the biggest population base, you don't have a test venue, and that I think is a real shame. You know, if I was living in Auckland, I'd be pretty disappointed by that. So the solution, I don't know. You probably know that better than me, but I think that's something that clearly needs to be looked at if it's not already.
Yeah, well, we're struggling to find an answer just as much as Auckland are struggling to find a venue, to be perfectly honest. But here's great catching up with you. Congratulations on your success with Islamabad United. Enjoy your time back home and whatever you're going to do next. So what commentary are you doing? Where are you going to be based for that?
So I'm heading over to the IPL in a couple of weeks to work for Geo over there. So
cool.
Yeah, I'm sort of involved with a couple of sides, so late nights and early mornings at the moment. So RCB got a win overnight, so obviously was with them for a long time. But yeah, just doing some work over there, and then going over doing some commentary. In about 2 to 3 weeks, I might even go to Pakistan for those T20s yet on my way over. Just trying to work out the schedule at the moment.
Good on you, Hess. Nice to hear you. It'd be great to hear you in commentary. Great to catch up, man. Stay safe and well. Travel safe. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.